Welcome, Dumbheads, to Wiki World Warriors. In this series, I'll be creating a new batch of World Warriors for the very goofy Street Fighter role-playing game from White Wolf. With each World Warrior, I'll be surveying one of the goofiest elements of character generation in that system, and I'll be calling upon a different international listener each episode to help my ignorant American ass better represent the other classier nations of the world. Each episode, armed only with their helpful guidance and cursory reference to Wikipedia, I'll attempt to give one more nation its moment in the street fighting sun. Today, that nation is... Denmark. Today, I think, is going to be an interesting one. We're discussing, as you just heard, the World Warrior from Denmark, a nation that has never had a World Warrior before. And that's not the only first of this series that we're addressing today. Also, this is the very first time that I am beginning an episode, like as I speak right now. I do not know who this character is going to be. I know exactly one thing about the character I'm going to attempt to create. The rest is in an audio file that I'm going to hear at the same time you do. The listener who helped me out for today's episode was slightly delayed in getting back to me. By the time he very kindly sent along his audio, I was deep in preparation for week one, so I have not yet heard this audio. I don't know where this is going to go. We'll find out together. Let's start, as we always do, though, by looking to the Street Fighter core book to see what it has to say about Denmark. Now, sadly but understandably, there is no entry for Denmark in the Street Fighter core book. In fact, there's not even a Scandinavia. The best we can do is the general entry for Europe, and as you recall from when we talked about the United Kingdom, all it says about Europe is that everybody in Europe is too fancy and wears powdered wigs and doesn't like street fighting, except for the European youths who are hooligans and love street fighting. And also, Cammy has a castle there. So this is no help at all. And what's worse, I know very little about Denmark. You got Hamlet, the demonym, which is Danish. I know I shouldn't be proud of knowing that, but look, Scandinavia is hard for Americans. It's a lot of little places close together. What if you were quizzed on the details of New England? Huh? Other countries? What if I asked you what the difference is between Maine and New Hampshire and Rhode Island and Vermont? You wouldn't know. I don't even know. That's the East Coast. They don't go to this school. My point is, I am truly clueless about this nation, except that I've been there briefly on a plane trip, and it was lovely. I only saw the airport, but it was nice. The people seemed cool. The airport seemed really nice. It was very noticeable. It's like when you go even a little bit out of the United States into Canada, and it's like you've driven out of a Beavis and Butthead cartoon into DuckTales. There's a palpable wholesomeness. I'm stalling. I'm nervous. Let's listen to the audio, generously provided to me by Elias Helfer, and let's see what we're going to do with this Danish world warrior.
Hello, Chris, and all my fellow dumbheads. My Danish world warrior is Knut Thorsen, the Jomsviking. Now, the Jomsviking used to be an elite group of Norse warriors and mercenaries who helped conquer England for the Danes. And they used to believe in strength and valor, and they had a very rigorous codex of honor. Now, Knud is channeling these warriors when he goes off to fight all around the world. He is an Asatru, which means that he believes in Thor and Odin. And he is also sort of a reenactor, so he goes to battle dressed in old Norseman's garb with a woolen cape, woolen trousers, and a shirt, probably wearing a hammer around his neck. Now he's got blonde hair and a sort of reddish blonde beard. His fighting style is probably special commando or something similar. It could be sort of Western kickboxing. It's definitely something that's pretty direct and relies on force more than finesse. However, he is not above a fair bit of trickery and dirty fighting when there's an opportunity for it. As long as it's not explicitly forbidden, he would be willing to do it. His special feat or his special power is that he's got a longboat where he has a certain advantage. That's his arena. And I think that the special advantage he has is that he's got his sea legs. So whereas the other fighters will have to get used to the rocking boat, he's perfectly comfortable and can also sort of jump around up the mast and sort of use the different things that are in the boat. He's got some character quirks. First of all, he is impeccably groomed and quite charming. When the Norsemen, the Danes, and the Norwegians went to Britain, the Saxons complained that the Norsemen were so so well groomed that they stole all of their women, and this is definitely something that Knut channels. But don't worry, he's not sort of your stereotypical womanizer. He believes in gender equality, and so is not out for some damsel in distress, but somebody who can give him a bit of a match. He's also quite stoic. He will use a number of war cries, but apart from that, he won't have many emotional outbursts. I figure that when he's a winner, instead of just shouting out something, he'll go, nice, or something similar, you know, that not so much with the emotions. Now, when he's not out being a Viking, he is a metal worker at a ship foundry, and not only that, but he's a union rep. Of course, the Jomsvikings Vikings were all about solidarity with each other and sort of going out as a big group, and he's channeling this in his workman approach, that he thinks that all the workers should unite and sort of stand together and demand fair pay and fair conditions. And so that's sort of how his Viking persona and his private persona comes together. So that is my take on this this modern Viking character, and I'm very interested to hear how that turns out in the stat blocks of the Street Fighter game.
God damn, Elias, that radio voice, I wasn't prepared. If I had listened to this earlier, I wouldn't be commenting on it, but I just heard it as you did, dear dumbheads, and that's a man's voice. All right. Moving on from that, Knud, I love him. You gave me so much for Knud. First of all, concept, I think modern day Viking does it. As for style, Elias suggested special forces, and I am happy to do that because we already have a special forces character in Marie Roy from Canada, but she doesn't use a lot of special forces maneuvers because she's mostly invested in her dog. I'm sorry, Calming is the dog's name. The dog has a name. Got to be respectful. But she didn't make a lot of use of special forces, and she has other styles that she draws from. So I'm going to go with special forces for Knud. And Knud Thorsen, we got our name too. So that's all easy enough. Prioritizing attributes, obviously physical has to go first. As charming as Vikings may be, at the end of the day, if you want the ladies to pay attention, you got to be able to vike. And I just feel like this motherfucker can vike. So physical, we got 7 points there. We've got a pretty straight ahead character here, so I'm going to go ahead and make strength 4 and dexterity and stamina 3. Focus on damage, focus on offense. However, we know that Knud is also immaculately groomed, very charming, similar in that way to Bull Onion, who we talked about in the first episode of this miniseries. I feel like these two would get along well, but there's a slightly different vibe. Bull is like a hipster nature boy, whereas Knud seems sophisticated. So I do feel like we've got enough disparity in style between Knud and Bull Onion here, even though at the end of the day, they're both big, good-looking dudes. So social comes secondary, and it's going to be more spread out than for Bull. We've got 5 dots to spend, so I'm going to go ahead and do Charisma 3, Manipulation 2, Appearance 3. Charming and attractive, only of average ability to manipulate people socially in keeping with his ethos. For mental, we've got average stats. We're just going to do 2 across the board, average in perception, intelligence, and wits. Onward to abilities. Knud's got a lot on his plate. He is a union leader, a historical reenactor, a worshiper of the traditional Norse pantheon, so we got a lot of ground to cover. We're going to go ahead and make skills primary. He's got 9 points to spend. I'm going to give him a couple points in drive, 3 points in leadership. Elias made a big point of the solidarity angle. And so I want Knud to be a real leader, an inspirational figure, able to give a stirring speech and battle cry, rally the troops. I'm going to give him a couple dots of survival as well. And then we'll round it out with a dot of blind fighting. He does fight in the open air on a longship, so sometimes it will be night. And a dot of stealth just for that little bit of sneakiness that we talked about. Knowledges will be secondary for Knud. We're going to do Arena 1, because as somebody who's got an unfair arena to other combatants, he knows what to look out for. Computer 2, just from his day job. Investigation 1, again, as a union leader, he's going to have to occasionally go gather some information. Mysteries 2, I think because of his faith, he is probably open to the supernatural a bit more. Knows some mythology as well. And then a dot of style lore, just for being sophisticated and cosmopolitan and seeing a lot of other fighters. Finally, we've got talents, only 4 dots to spend here. We're going to do 3 in intimidation. Vikings, of course, well known for their ability to strike fear in their opponent's heart. And then a dot in alertness, just because it's a good general skill to have. Once again, I'm just clipping through these. It kind of writes itself, because Elias gave me a ton, and Viking is just such a strong concept. Even for somebody who doesn't know very much about Denmark, it just gives me everything I need. I just, these points fall into place almost of their own accord. We're on to backgrounds now, and this is where we get our goofy character generation option. As Elias mentioned, Knud has a longboat that he fights on. He has an arena that gives him an unfair advantage, which is a thing that is in the game and in the setting. Apparently, this is just accepted. Like, we thought that Kaina was stretching it with, like, fighting people in her family's scrapyard and throwing tires at them. That's not a stretch at all. It's what the arena background is for. And I'll tell you why. It's because in the core book, arena is a weak-ass background. I know this because when I was a kid, I got the core book first. And so naturally, being a kid, I made a million characters for this game. I always took arena, pretty much, because I'm just that kind of person. I love having a place. Put me in any role-playing game, any environment, the first thing I want to do is build a fort. In Changeling, I want a freehold. In Doctor Who, I want a TARDIS. In a superhero game, I want to be whatever man, and I want a whatever cave. So naturally, Street Fighter, I want an arena. But the game does not do a lot to incentivize me to take this background. It says, quote, "You run your own arena. Arenas range from small boxing rings set up in a character's garage to enormous coliseums seating tens of thousands. An arena could even be a remote island far removed from civilization. If your arena or you become well known, managers will seek you out in hopes of using your arena. Eventually, you could even host your own tournaments." And then here are the five dots of arena. 1. Small ring set up in a garage or barn. 2. A modest ring set up in a dojo or other private place. 3. An arena of some renown. Some Street Fighters may actually seek it out. 4. A well-known arena. Promoters are already talking about bringing their teams to it. 5. A grand arena, one which could very easily host a World Warrior tournament. Now, if only their managers would return your calls. That part's from the book. That's not me being snarky. That's the book. And the reason is, if you're playing a beginning Street Fighter, what the fuck use do you have for a stadium? You know, this is not Street Fighter Manager Simulator. This is not SmackDown versus Raw GM mode. This is Street Fighter. You play a Street Fighter and you fight in streets. You can win glory and honor and money on a street just as easily as you can a stadium. So what do you want a stadium for? That's 5 wasted background points, especially because it's an empty stadium. So the Street Fighter Player's Guide, about which we've had to say a lot before, it's the book that gave us cybernetics and animal hybrids. It saw a problem with the arena background, and as usual for the Player's Guide, it overkilled that problem with the ferocity of a majestic lion pouncing on a field mouse. If you look in the Player's Guide under arenas, here's what you get. It begins with a quote from Samurai Pizza Cats. Quote, "Oh great, a rock shaped like a giant skull. They always mean trouble." I do love the Samurai Pizza Cats. No objection there. It goes on to say that arenas come with benefits but also drawbacks. Reputable Street Fighters only fight in arenas that are known to and accepted by the local residents. You have a responsibility to, like, protect the town from ruffians, minimize the disturbance that Street Fighter tournaments create, improve the area, do some donations, pick up trash on the sidewalk. In exchange, the townspeople will, like, look out for you, keep the police from raiding the place. If they win some money betting on you to win, then maybe they'll share it with you. That's all, like, storyteller hook stuff, right? Which, to me, somewhat diminishes the mystique of street fighting. If all the regular townspeople, like all the regular grandmas and grandpas and small business owners, know all about your underground fighting circuit. But anyway, that's all fluff. What you really care about is something called arena advantages. Quote, "For each dot in the arena background, the advantages are as follows. At one dot, it's not very much. It's just that, like, it's convenient to have your own place. The police look the other way. At two dots, you double your glory gains and losses in your own arena. No disadvantage to your opponent. That's fine. At three dots, your honor gains and losses are also doubled. This is starting to give you a competitive edge because you can recharge chi faster, but it's still an edge for you. It's nothing against your opponent. At arena 4, quote, "Your arena is unique and somewhat spectacular. It has nooks, crannies, and conditions that only you are truly accustomed to. When rolling for damage in your arena, your difficulty drops to 5 instead of 6. You can decide exactly what kind of conditions make it this way. However, an opponent who makes a successful perception plus arena roll can negate this advantage if their successes match the size of the arena." Then you go up to arena 5, quote, "You have an intimate knowledge of your arena, which is unlike any other in the circuit. For the first 3 turns of any round, you may add +1 to speed, damage, or movement. As above, an opponent who makes a successful perception plus arena roll can negate this advantage if his successes match the size of the arena." So you're a cheater, right? I mean, that's what we're getting down to. Your attacks do more damage. You get extra speed, extra damage, extra movement because you know the arena, because it's designed in a way that if you're not ready for it, it obstructs you. So you invite strangers to your arena and your arena fucks them up, but not you, and therefore you win. Because you're a cheater. Yes, we're all agreed on this. You're a cheater. That's what this background is. Fortunately, in Knud, we got a character who is just the right kind of cheater for this. If they made their Perception plus Arena roll, then they'd be fine. If they studied what it's like to fight on a reconstruction Viking longboat, then maybe they wouldn't be having so much trouble, huh? That's on them for not taking their street fighting seriously. That seems like something Knud can get behind. So we're just going to start straight out with Arena 5 for backgrounds. And I think that plus 1 to speed, damage, or move as he desires for all of his moves for the first 3 rounds, that's pretty good to simulate that Knud knows how the boat moves. He can move with them. You know, he can run at his opponent when the boat starts to tip in their direction, get a little extra velocity or a little extra distance because he's got those sea legs. That's it for backgrounds for this stage, but we're definitely going to come back and fill in more backgrounds later because Knud's a pretty well-connected guy. There's a lot going on in his background. Moving on now to techniques. Keep in mind that Knud is a special forces guy. It's not totally clear to me on background where he would have served. Let's see if Wikipedia can help. Denmark military. Danish Defense is the name of the unified armed forces of the Kingdom of Denmark. There's the Royal Danish Army, the Royal Danish Navy, the Royal Danish Air Force, the Home Guard. They do have special forces, including an amphibious attack and infiltration unit. The, let me attempt this pronunciation, Frømandskorpset, aka the Frogman Corps. Going to their page, kind of interesting. They mainly do reconnaissance, it says. They can also do assault and sabotage. They do maritime anti-terrorism. They also fight crime. They support the police. They had some operations in Afghanistan. They were involved in counter-piracy operations. Okay, this seems fine. Let's put this in his background. We know he's got special forces somewhere. Frogman Corps seems like a reasonable thing for an old Viking soul to get into. Anyway, that gives me a little context for what his special forces training is. So thinking about what kind of moves we want, we know this is a pretty straight-ahead, smash-mouth fighter. I think we want to go for a heavy hitter here because he gets arena bonuses in the first 3 rounds of combat. So if he can really hit hard and devastate somebody in those first 3 rounds, in the first 3 turns of the round, then that's really going to serve him well. He doesn't want to nickel and dime him. So I think let's focus on punch and also a little bit on grab, because that way, like Kaina, who also had her own arena, he can throw people around into the things on the ship, throw people into the water. Seems like an appropriately genteel Viking way to handle a problem, throw somebody into the water. He's not a boxer, so we want him to have some kick, but I'm going to stick with 1 dot there. Likewise, just a dot of block, but we're going to do 3 dots of punch and 2 dots of grab. No focus. He's kind of spiritual, but not like fireball spiritual. All right, with techniques in place, we can now do special maneuvers. First of all, I definitely want to add a detail to Knud here. I want one or both of his hands to have a big, like, back of the hand tattoo of Mjolnir. This is something he can take into his daily life to represent his faith and his Viking spirit when he's got to, you know, wear his suit and everything. You can't wear your horned helmet to the labor negotiation. But yeah, so he's got the Mjolnir tattoos, and he does a spinning clothesline. He likes spinning moves where he smacks you with his fist. That seems appropriately mobile and hard-hitting for this straight-ahead aggressive character, and it seems like a cool thing to do on a boat. So let's see what kind of points we need to spend to make this happen. Well, first of all, it takes punch 4. So we're going to have to spend freebie points on that. Secondly, it takes athletics 3. So let's go back. Let's take that dot out of grab, that extra dot. We'll take it down to grab 1. We'll put that dot in athletics. And you know what? What the heck? Let's go crazy. Special Forces has no block maneuvers. Let's take away his dot of block. That's very Viking and aggressive, right? Dude can't even block. He doesn't even put his hands up. Let's both punch each other until someone stops. That is the Viking way. So we'll put that dot from block, that wasted dot of block, into athletics. Now we've got punch 4, athletics 3, and we can spend 5 of our 7 starting special maneuver points on the spinning clothesline. This is an unwisely huge purchase for a starting character, but it's awesome. I paid for this flavor text. Let me read it to you. Quote, "Whirling destruction!" Exclamation mark. The wrestler spins her body like a top. Her outstretched arms club any opponent near her. She can wade through a gang of street punks, sending them flying in all directions. This is one of those moves that hits everybody around you. The speed is plus 0, the damage is plus 0, the move is minus 2, so Knud's only going to be able to move 1 space with it, or 2, if he takes advantage of his boat. But when he moves up to you and hits you with that clothesline, it knocks you back, and then if he's got more move left, he can move again and hit you again. So he can maybe get 2 tests out of this, in addition to hitting a whole crowd of people. I have to admit, this is not great for one-on-one street fighting, but something we haven't really had occasion to talk about on the podcast yet is that beginning street fighters often fight in a team scenario. So up against a team of opposing street fighters, this is some pretty good, like, DPS versus the opposing team, to use an obnoxious video game term. And it's just cool. spinning around your fists like Mjolnir. It's badass. I've only got two more points to spend for special maneuvers for Knud. I'm going to go ahead and spend one of those on the spinning back fist. Now, you may think I'm over-investing in the spinning punches here, but in fact, this is a totally different niche. The damage is pretty good at +2. The speed is -1, so it's a little less quick, but the move is +1, which means that Knud's rotating his whole body around. It's fancy looking, but it's slick. It just seems very Knud. It's another move where he gets to swing his fist around like a hammer, and it allows him to move a long way toward his opponent, to get right up in their face. You combine that with potentially a move bonus from the boat, which is a small space to fight on anyway. He should be able to get to somebody from anywhere on the boat right quick. And that takes us to our final move, which is throw. If you got your own arena, you can stow stuff around everywhere, have barrels to throw people through, throw people into the water. I just think Vikings are really cool. I think Mjolnir is really cool. I think hitting people with your fists like a hammer is really cool. I think spinning back fists are cool. Have you ever seen Eddie Kingston do a spinning back fist? He did one to Archibald Peck that sent him into the past. When you can hit somebody so hard that they travel back in time, that's a good-ass move. Anyway, that does it for now for special maneuvers. We're on to glory and honor. I'm going to do honor too for the gender egalitarianism, the solidarity, being a nice guy, albeit one who's willing to push the rules a little bit. I don't think that honor is going to be rocketing up anytime in the near future, but honor 2 is good, and he's going to start at glory 1, but of course his reputation will grow. Chi and willpower, as always, come straight out of the style itself. From there, we're on to freebie points. I had to spend 5 of my 15 freebie points on that extra dot of punch to get it up to punch 4. That leaves me with 10, and I think a lot of those are going to get spent on backgrounds for this character, because he's just got a lot going on. He's got the backstory curse, where you want to buy more cool moves, but your backstory just compels you to get dots of allies or some bullshit. I don't think I'm actually going to have to get him allies. Fortunately, his background does not prescribe any friends, and as a dedicated min-maxer, if the rules don't say he has to have friends, fucking cut them. You don't need to buy friends when you're a Viking with a longboat. The people will come. We've already got 5 dots of arena. We don't need an animal companion. He does have contacts, though. He's got labor contacts. He's got contacts who are into Viking reconstruction, so he's going to know, like, historians, people who would know more about mythology, all of which could come up in a Street Fighter campaign. So I'm going to go ahead and give him some contacts. Knud's going to need a manager. I'll just give him an average manager. Resources. Obviously, he can fund this extravagant Viking reconstruction lifestyle, so he's got to have a pretty decent bankroll for that. So I've settled on contacts 2, manager 2, resources 2. That leaves me with 4 dots to spend. So I'm actually going to amp up mysteries by a dot and have him be more interested in the supernatural. And I'm also going to amp up intimidation so that he's got intimidation 4. A very scary dude when he wants to be. And that's it for the mechanical stuff. In fact, that's pretty much it for the whole character because everything else came to me from Elias. His appearance, the red hair, the beard, the fact that he dresses like a Viking, his equipment, his hammer of Thor that he wears, his quirks, the fact that he's charming, the fact that he believes in solidarity, the fact that he is like representing the Viking lifestyle. I especially love his signature, his victory pose, his hot new catchphrase. Nice. I am not exaggerating in the least when I say that I would buy a, nice t-shirt. If a pro wrestler's gimmick was that they beat the shit out of their opponent with a spinning clothesline in like 3 seconds, just a series of squash matches, and after every one, they grab the microphone, say, nice, and then drop it and walk away, I would mark the fuck out. I would follow that wrestler on Twitter. So I am all in on Knud. I love this. Yeah, there's nothing left here for me to do except to turn it back over to Elias to see how I did and see what he thinks of my uneducated effort to represent Denmark in the echelons of global street fighting.
So, hey Chris. First of all, I gotta say, I think when I designed my concept, I'd forgotten what a goofy game Street Fighters is. So in my mind, it was a far more straight-laced character. And so I'm glad you could goof him up a little bit and turn him into a real Street Fighter warrior. So, a few comments to what you did. First of all, I hadn't considered the fact that as a Special Forces guy, he would of course have needed to be in the Special Forces. But I think your selection was spot on. As a matter of fact, when I was listening to it, I was like, of course he'd be in the Frogmen, or as we say in Danish, the Frømænd. That actually gives him another possibility as well. You see, the Frømænd is a bit of a famous corps because our crown prince used to be in this particular corps. And so that means that one of his contacts might actually even get to be the Crown Prince of Denmark. So that's a very exciting possibility, and I think that fits in with the whole concept very neatly. Now, his arena, I think that works pretty well. I like it. Pretty much like I imagined. I hadn't considered where the audience would be when I designed it, only sort of to what options he would have. But I feel like it can work with either the audience being on a boat sailing next to him, or maybe it can be in the harbor or something. And the effects, I think, suit him very well. So that's really great. Now, you were talking about how he needed resources to be a reenactor. And I think it's important for him to have crafts more than resources, because a lot of the reenactors that I know, at least, the Viking reenactors, they make a lot of this stuff themselves. But apart from that, I think that's pretty well hit as well. And as a matter of fact, I feel like when he turns into a real full-scale world warrior, because you're talking about how he might not use chi so much, and I think he could actually, you know, maybe do something with that. That, you know, the more powerful he gets and the more he goes into the mysteries of sort of the Old Norse religion, he might actually start to channel Thor. And so I could see him throwing a hammer that returns to his hand, maybe, or throwing lightning, or maybe even sort of taking on the visage of this mighty god warrior. But that's, you know, there are some other ways he could go as well. But it's just, you know, one way where chi and those sort of semi-magical powers might actually be a little more important for him. His powers, or sort of his moves, you took away his dodge or his block. And that's not what I had envisioned, because I had sort of envisioned him as somebody who was a bit more calculating and sort of ready to strike when the moment struck. But of course, it works out very well when you take into account the fact that he wants to get his punches in before his opponent gets their sea legs and gets used to his environment. So it makes sense for him to be somebody who wants to strike while the iron's hot. Also, it works well with the idea of the Viking who sort of jumps out of their longboats, rushes onto shore, and strikes before the Irish monks, I mean the opponent warriors, gets their act together. So in that sense, it works pretty well with the concept as well, I feel. So all in all, I feel like it hits pretty well, and I feel like it's fun to listen to, and I feel like we got somebody who we can work with here. So, all in all, when we get down to it, I feel like I can award you a grade of, nice.
That's it for today. Join me tomorrow when a challenger appears on MDC's Wiki World Warriors. Wiki World Warriors is a Mega Dumbcast miniseries made possible by listeners like you who contribute to the show on Patreon. A new episode will drop every day except for Sunday until all 12 World Warriors have been revealed. If you'd like to contribute to Mega Dumbcast and you'd like access to a special RSS feed of MDC Megasodes to help you binge the show's back catalog, sign up at patreon.com/megadumbcast. I am Mega Dumbcast on Gmail, Podbean, Twitter, and Instagram. The Street Fighter RPG is by White Wolf, and the Street Fighter franchise, including all associated trademarks, is property of Capcom. This episode's music, used under a Creative Commons license, is Fire Darer by Saw Square Noise. Find more music at n.sawsquarenoise.com. That's en.sawsquarenoise.com. This episode is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial share-alike license. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time. Now go home and be a family man.